Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation Omnibus Conference Committee. I'm Frank Hornstein, the House Chair. We have a number of items that we are going to get to today. My understanding from Senator Newman is that you have till 4:30 or whenever the Senate reconvenes.
That's correct.
Okay, we'll try to get through as much as possible. My preference would not be to recess and reconvene, but we'll try to get through as much of our agenda as possible. The first couple items I'd like to start with are carries over from yesterday that we'd like to finish up. The first one is the speed limits, the city speed limit issue. And I understand that we have the House and Senate authors of this, these provisions have huddled over the last day and have come up with some agreed upon language. So perhaps Ms. Stengel can go over that. And I believe the House author would like to testify before the committee, and we will grant him that privilege. So Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just to refresh everybody about the two different speed limit provisions, the House has a speed provision that allows cities and towns to change the speed limit on a residential roadway, which is defined in statute, without an engineering and traffic study. And the Senate has a version that allows cities to change speed limits on all city streets.
Thank you, Ms. Stengel. And Senator Dibble, did you want to comment at all about this?
Or so Mr. Chair, it's probably an overstatement to say that we have, you know, agreed upon language. There's a couple of ideas. One is that we could adopt for both provisions, and we understand from council that they wouldn't be a terrible thing. They wouldn't they wouldn't be in conflict with each other. They could work in tandem or work separately. And the reason for that is that if you're not averse, oh, there he is. Representative Elkins is at the table. He can help explain his language a little bit better. But as I understand it, it basically creates a default speed limit on residential roadways, which are slightly redefined to be residential roadways, as most would understand them, to 25 miles per hour. So that would be the House or Representative Elkins' approach. And then the language that the Senate brings forward, it allows, as Ms. Stengel described, cities to establish speed limits for city streets that are under their jurisdiction, and that wouldn't include any town roads, county roads, or trunk highways that are in their city. They have to do so with certain requirements that would follow their decision that would inform their decision to change speed limits on the streets that they own. It would set speed limits based on safety engineering and traffic analysis, considering basically the profession's guidance, and then make sure that they engage the public in informing them about the change. And then there is an A48 amendment, which we can pass around just to get in front of folks. And I don't think Representative Elkins has seen this, which would be kind of a merger of those ideas. So that's where we're at.
Thank you, Senator Dibble.
I would maybe request that Representative Elkins give his perspective.
Sure. Thank you. Representative Elkins, welcome to the conference committee. And please state your name for the record, and you could go over the House provisions from your perspective, and then we could.
We have the 48.
It's coming around.
Yeah.
The A48 amendment is being passed out. But if you could explain your perspective, that would be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm Steve Elkins, House Representative for District 49B. I took the opportunity last night to go back and reread the section of the statute. So speed limits are under 169.14. And within subdivision 2 of that statute, There is a depiction of default speed limits for different categories of roads, including the first one is 30 miles per hour is a default speed limit in an urban district. Number 8, and it is an existing provision, says 35 miles per hour in a rural residential district if adopted by the road authority having jurisdiction over the rural. Number 7, subdivision 2, paragraph 7, says 25 miles per hour in a residential roadway if adopted by the road authority having jurisdiction over the residential roadway. So those are existing provisions in current state law and basically established defaults. So what the House bill does, all it does is it expands the definition of what constitutes a residential roadway. And the definitions are back up in the front section of 169 and 169.011, where the existing definition is a residential roadway means a city street or town road that is less than 1/2 mile in total length. And that, as a practical matter, limits the applicability of that to cul-de-sacs. And so what I've done in my bill was to say, you know, either less than 1/2 mile in total length or to in an area zoned exclusively for housing that is not a collector or arterial street. In other words, purely residential, purely local streets, not any of the collector or arterial higher level roads. So my bill doesn't change anything in terms of the allowable speed limits in those existing districts. It just expands somewhat the universe of roads that a local city could apply the 25-mile-per-hour residential roadway category to. So the reason I don't think that that the Senate provision either conflicts or is in any way contradictory is that the Senate provision is back in subdivision 5 of 169.14, which is a section that deals with more specific or detailed exceptions to the provisions in subdivision 2, which are just defaults. And, you know, as such, there are examples like school zones and the like. And these are applied in lieu of or in embellishing to the results in the provisions in subdivision 2. So the things that the Senate bill allows in subdivision 5 are perfectly compatible with what it already exists in subdivision 2, whether or not the conference committee decides to adopt the House language as well. And from reading it and looking at the big picture, I think it makes sense to pass both of these provisions, include both of them as they were written. So I have not seen the language. I'm looks like an improvement on the original Senate language. Senator Dibble, would you agree with that?
So,
Senator Dibble.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Elkins, I'm actually seeing it pretty much for the first time myself.
Okay.
This was a suggestion of how we might make our two provisions, kind of merge our two provisions. And so I don't know, Ms. Stengel, do you want to help us understand the A48?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If you look at page R97 of the side-by-side, mm-hmm. sort of puts this all into context. So you'll see Senate Section 60 and R97 is zoning within local area, and there's the paragraph B, which is all of the new language. So essentially what the A48 amendment does is takes paragraph B out of the subdivision and puts it into its own subdivision. And then in the previous paragraph, you'll see on lines 53.22 and 53.23, you'll see a couple of cross-references there. Paragraph B in subdivision 5A, there are actually some other sections that should either be included there or not. So there's a change there that just deletes those cross-references as provided by law, and that clears up some of the ambiguity about how these things all interact together. Looking at the A48 amendment, there were two changes to what was paragraph B and is now subdivision H. You'll see it used to start with notwithstanding paragraph A. That was removed because, you know, it's in a new subdivision, so that's unnecessary. But you will also see on lines 13 and 14 of the amendment That's where it says without conducting an engineering and traffic study or investigation, and that has the same effect as the notwithstanding language did before. Mm-hmm. So I hope that makes sense.
So.
Yeah, I'll just say this makes sense to me.
Senator Dibble.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Chair, if I could ask a question of Ms. Stengel, would this then work in tandem with the House language, or would it be in lieu of both provisions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. When I was drafting the amendment, it was with the idea that it would work with the House language together.
All right. Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Chair, then I would suggest that we adopt the House language and then and adopt 848 as a substitute for the Senate language.
Okay, thank you. Is that Senator Newman, Chair Newman?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yesterday when we were discussing this, my concern is to have two provisions in statute that were very similar and would create an ambiguity in terms of our statutes. With Ms. Stengel's explanation of the 848, I think that has now been resolved, and I would support Senator Dibble's recommendation.
Thank you, Chairman Newman. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the rare privilege of hopefully making a small correction in Ms. Stengel's work, which hardly ever happens. On law, line 1.6, I believe we should insert after page 53, we should insert line 23.
I guess I would ask Ms. Stengel to comment.
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. On line 6, it should say page 53, line 23.
Chair.
Senator Dibble.
So I would suggest, can I just incorporate that?
Yes.
Rather than making a separate motion.
Okay. You don't
All right.
need to vote on that.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Can I make this all as one motion?
Yes,
we adopt House provision on lines 90.5 to 90.8, section 49 on page R95. And then we adopt the A48 amendment as modified by Representative Torkelson.
Senator Dibble's motion is before us. Discussion? Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion carries. Thank you very much, Representative Elkins and Senator Dibble, for your good work on this. Members, we have another item that has come up, and another member of the House of Representatives that has requested to speak before us, and I will grant him that courtesy. By way of background, there was a provision that Representative Detmer will and Representative Torkelson will explain to us, and it is something that was heard in the House Transportation and Ways and Means Committees, and I've afforded Representative Detmer the courtesy of bringing this before the committee by amendment. We'll discuss this amendment. Senator Newman and I have also had an opportunity to discuss it, and depending on the committee's wishes, we will likely lay this over, but I wanted to hear this and have the committee engage with this issue and ask questions, et cetera. So, Representative Torkelson, you have an amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you bringing this forward. At this point, I'm not sure that I actually want to move it if we're not going to take a vote, but I would like to have it presented and explained by the author.
That is a reasonable request. Members, it is the A-106 amendment, and I'm going to call on Representative Detmer. Please say welcome to our conference committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If he was a frequent a frequent guest at the Transportation Committee this year, even though he's not a member, bringing a lot of good legislation before us. Please state your name for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm State Representative Bob Detmer.
Proceed.
And, again, this was brought to me, this situation was brought to me about a year ago by constituents in Chisago County, and I represent part of Chisago County. And there was an accident occurred almost 2 years ago. And in that accident, a car driven by a mother and their two daughters, and the 11-year-old daughter was killed in the accident. A guy went through the other driver went through a stop sign and T-boned the car. And the parents felt that they were going to get a court hearing. And they waited for several months, then finally they were informed that there was a mistake made by the deputy sheriff. There's a box that you check when there's a death and a serious injury. And that didn't happen, and the other driver was just fined for going through a stop sign and paid a fee by mail of $135. So they didn't know where to turn. So finally, I called the county attorney and also the sheriff, and I asked if I could bring the parents in to meet with them, and we did at the county sheriff office in Chisago County. And the parents knew that if we did get any type of law passed to prevent that from happening again for other family, at least they would have some closure for their family. And with the county attorney and also with our nonpartisan staff here, we put together some language, just a one-pager, that the bill would make it a misdemeanor if a vehicle operated violates traffic or motor vehicle regulations and causes great bodily harm and death unless another penalty is established. And, of course, the background of the great bodily harm is defined in the criminal code. It includes bodily injury and creates a high chance of death and causes serious disfiguration and causes a permanent impairment to the body. So the parents can see that this has happened before. And what the parents want, they want some closure on this. They've already forgiven. They've already forgiven the other driver, who and the sheriff and the county attorney wanted them to meet. The other driver didn't want to meet. But what this bill will do, it will keep it from happening again if there's a mistake made by an officer, in this case of the deputy sheriff. So just a little on a personal note, I had both these students, both parents as students when I was teaching at Forest Lake High School. The father was an all-state wrestler. He also spent years in the military, and I was a firefighter for St. Paul. And they would hope that this would be resolved here in the legislature. They didn't know where to turn. And I think as legislators, we know constituents come to us many times because they don't know where else to turn to. So hopefully we can get this through. It would fit well in the omnibus bill if the chairs and the committee would like to do that. I'm here for any questions, too.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. And I'll have some comments, but I wanted to, I think both Senator Newman and I will have some brief comments, but I wanted to see if any members had any questions or wanted to weigh in on this. Yes, Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Detmer, first off, of course, this was a huge tragedy, and Brooklyn, by this picture, seems to be an adorable gal. It's very sad. One of the questions I had asked you earlier was, have you talked to the Judicial Committee chairs on it, and would they agree that they would not need to see something like this?
Mr. Chair, and Senator Noy, I haven't talked to that chair.
Okay.
Any further questions or discussion? Representative Torkelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to thank you for allowing Representative Detmer to come forward with this issue. He has worked hard on this, brought some very compelling testimony to the House side that we heard, and it's very moving to see the situation this family has been put into, and I certainly understand their desire to have some closure. The only other thing I would add is that there is no fiscal cost to this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Let me just say, express my appreciation, yep, Representative Detmer, for your efforts as well, and to share with the committee, similarly to Representative Torkelson, I thought we had a very powerful and moving hearing in the Transportation Committee, and I think from a transportation policy perspective and traffic safety perspective, I am in complete agreement with you. We passed this out of our committee unanimously. It also passed the Ways and Means Committee. But I thought that Senator Hall raised a good question. I know that the chair, public safety chair, is potentially interested in hearing this in the House. I know that in the equivalent committee, Judiciary and Senate, there's interest in hearing this. So my preference would be to lay this bill over. It'll still be before this committee, at least through the end of session, but I think that it's really more not of a policy concern, it's more of a process concern, and I think it's especially in the Senate, but I think I have concerns as well in the House. So that's why we're laying this over and not taking a vote on it today, but you've certainly done a good job of raising everyone's consciousness, at least those who haven't heard the story before. So that's my perspective. I would also ask Chair Newman for his.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Detmer, you and I have talked about this, and I sincerely appreciate you coming forward with this. Senator Housley is the author of the bill in the Senate. And as you indicated, this has happened before, and what you're trying to accomplish is to see that it doesn't happen again. And in this case, you have some constituents that didn't know where else to turn, and they turned to the right individual. And I think that this is something that we really, as a legislature, should work on and ultimately pass it. I have talked to the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he has expressed a specific desire to hear this bill. The bill is, if we don't get it accomplished this year, it is still viable for next year. And I will assure you that I will again talk to the chair and the judiciary and do whatever I am able to do to see that that hearing occurs so this matter can move forward. But bearing that, I would request that this matter not move forward at this point, that we lay it over and address it, as Chairman Hornstein has indicated, with the proper procedure and process.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I guess I could speak. I could speak for the parents. They're very patient. They know that things don't happen. They've been waiting for over 2 years that we try to work on something here. But they're patient, and they realize that things here at the Capitol don't happen overnight. Well, it might have happened overnight, never know. But I really appreciate the chance of coming before the committee. And on the behalf of the parents, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Detmer, I would really like to work with you on this. I know I shared during the House committee something similar happened to my family after my cousin was killed in a car crash. And so there are also some other issues. The crash that my cousin was killed in, it was a drunk driver, and the blood sample was lost in the mail. And so I think there are some other issues that we may want to look at as well. So I'd be really interested in working with you on this.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I looked at the report by the county, and the driver passed the drug test, the alcohol test, and everything, but of course they didn't check the cell phone. So we just don't know why he went through the stop sign, but the parents would like to have some closure. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. So is there any further discussion or comments? So with that, members, I will lay over the A-106 amendment. And thank you, Representative Detmer. Okay, members, we're still waiting on an amendment for the slowpoke provision, and we will. I promise we will get to that. Our goal is to get to it today. We really. That is why I dismissed Mr. Burris to work on that. But until we get that, we'll just revert back to the HF 1555 Omnibus Conference Committee provisions for discussion 516.19, the page that's in your packets, dated 8:41 last night. So not sure Ms. Stengel is available to go over bicycle regulations, even though it's a House provision. And I'll just introduce this topic by saying that I understand and respect the Senate's position related to the use of HUTD funds for bicycles. While I may have some agreement and disagreement depending on the specific route, I respect that. What I would like to do with these next couple of provisions is to look at the policy issues, not the HUTD issues, present those and in hopes that we could at least get, you know, perhaps some buy-in for that. And I say that again, respecting some of the reasons why the Senate has not been inclusive of these provisions. But I hope that if the committee finds them non-controversial, we could act on them. And so what I'd like to do is have Ms. Stengel go over those, and then we can have a discussion. And I'm not sure if Mr. Grilly is here or not, but if he is, I would welcome some brief testimony from him, very brief testimony. So Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Looking at line two of the items for discussion today, the first of the bikeways, the first of the bicycle regulation sections is House Section 4 on R67, and this amends the definition of bikeway to cross-reference an existing definition in Chapter 169. So, in other words, it's eliminating the same definition in two different places. The next is House Section 40, and that is on page R93. This amends the definition of bicycle lane to strike or shoulder, with the implication that the bike lane is part of the road that is traveled and not part of the shoulder. The next is on House Section 41, page R93, and this amends the definition of bikeway to also include shared use paths and similar bicycle facilities. The next section is House Section 46 on R94, and this provides a definition of a narrow width lane to refer to a lane where a bicycle and a vehicle cannot operate side by side in compliance with the safe passing distance in the next section. And that next section is House Section 54 on page R99, and this has to do with when a vehicle is passing a bicyclist, and it does several things. One, it strikes a provision that states the rules of the subdivision govern passing vehicles proceeding in the same direction, so it's always passing bicycles. Strikes a reference that requires a vehicle to give an audible warning before it passes. And then it provides that a driver overtaking a bike on a roadway or shoulder must maintain a safe clearance distance while passing, and that means no less than 3 feet or half the width of the vehicle, whichever is greater, or alternatively enter into another lane of the roadway while passing. And in addition to maintaining that safe distance, they have to maintain that clearance until the vehicle is safely past the bike. And then there's also some non-substantive and technical changes that are in there. The next sections are sections 58 and 59, both on R102. The first House Section 58 specifies that traffic laws apply to bicyclists both on the shoulder of a roadway and the roadway itself. A person lawfully operating a bicycle on a sidewalk or in a crosswalk has the same duties as a pedestrian if the pedestrian were in those same situations. And then you'll see some language that is stricken from the next section and moved up here. The pedestrian language I just mentioned was stricken from the next section and moved into this section. So Section 59 has to do with riding rules. And it requires a bicyclist to ride as close to the right-hand curb or edge of the road as a bicyclist determines is safe, but is not required to do so for a variety of reasons, things like passing, preparing to turn left, unsafe conditions. And the new language here is the bicyclist is not required to ride all the way to the right on a narrow width lane, and that's the definition we talked about earlier, where a vehicle and a bike can't ride next to each other with a safe clearance distance. This section also eliminates a prohibition on bicyclists impeding the movement of traffic and requires a cyclist on a bikeway to give an audible signal before passing another bicyclist or an individual. And then finally, Section 136, Paragraph A is a reviser instruction that moves the definition of shared use path from Chapter 160 to 169 to sort of consolidate all of the bike definitions.
Thank you, Ms. Stengel. Mr. Grilly, if you have some very brief testimony, then we can hear that, and then we'll have a committee conversation. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dorian Grilly. I'm the Executive Director of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. First, I want to thank Senator Jasinski for being the author of this and Senator Newman for including it in your policy bill. And I want to thank Representative Bernardi because this language actually passed the House 122-0 with, well, I guess that's pretty bipartisan support.
Mr. Grilly, correction, that would be tripartisan. We have three caucuses. So I would just note to the committee that the New Republican caucus also voted for this provision. Please continue.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the House, we had testimony from a retired police officer from Coon Rapids. We have a committee that really works pretty hard on developing these recommendations. We got our recommendations from the most of these are recommended best practices from the National Conference of State Legislatures. So I'll just leave it at that if anybody has any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Members, are there any questions for Mr. Grilly? Thank you. Is there discussion? I don't know if we formally moved this yet. Is there a motion to move this? If not, I would move House Sections 4, 40 to 41, 46, 54, 58, 59, and 136A. Committee discussion. Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I have a quick question for House Fiscal Staff. Of all of these policies, is there any HUTD impact to within these policies? Are they just strictly policy, or is there any fiscal or HUTD impact to them?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Tabke, no, there is not a HUTD impact to these provisions. I'll note that there was a fiscal note for substantially similar language last year that did not show a cost for sections similar to these.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Lee. Any further discussion? Mr. Hall. Or Senator Hall.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going through the omnibus bill on these issues, I think there's some really good stuff here. My problem is I have a lot of questions, and I think just not hearing this in committee and being able to really go through it, I would have a really hard time voting for it. But I think there are some really good things in here. So I'll leave with that a reason I'll probably vote against it.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Hall. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Senator Hall has brought up a very good point. Kind of on the fly, I was taking notes with the explanation in it, and it sounds like a lot of the definition parts would not be too difficult. But just as an example, when we get into the area where we are dealing with bikes passing cars or cars passing bikes, and the language regarding a safe distance. One of the definitions is the half the width of a car. I'm not too sure what that might mean. And perhaps I didn't hear it correctly, but I didn't hear anything in terms of the responsibility of the bicyclist to attempt to keep a safe distance. So I guess those are just a couple of examples as I picked up as we were walking through it. So I'd be a lot more comfortable having more testimony than what we'd be able to have in this setting, and go through these on a piece-by-piece basis where we have the actual language in front of us in a context easier to deal with than in the conference committee side-by-sides. And so I will also not be supporting the motion.
Thank you. Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chairman.
I just want to reiterate what Mr. Greeley had said, is that this is all, these are all very, very standard, non-controversial bike regulation language that will really help with the safety and consistency and the enforcement of bike laws throughout the state of Minnesota. And these are all provisions that were passed last year by the Senate. They were Senator Jasinski had this bill last year, and it was passed, and also Senator Senjum was on it, Senator Dibble, Senator Carlson were on these bills, on this suite of bills last year. It's very, very similar, if not the same language for the vast majority of it. It was also included in the skinny omnibus bill on things that got vetoed last year that we really wanted to get through this year. And so this is really good, solid language that I hope that people can come on board with. It has been fully vetted by the Senate. It was voted on last year, was included in the omnibus bill, and should hopefully be an easy one to include this year.
Okay, Mr. Greeley, I see that you're up there, but I don't think we...
Okay.
I know that you wanted to respond to a couple of things that Senator Newman said, but I think we're moving on from public testimony. Senator Newman.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a very quick response to Representative Tapke. The language that is in the House version this year, I do not believe is identical to the language that we had in the House bill in previous bills. If it were, I would perhaps feel a little bit differently. But I think the language is different, and I think that the Senate should have an opportunity to go through this language and these provisions again. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Newman. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Okay, members, we have one more set of bike provisions for today, and that would be House Sections 5 and F. I see Mr. Burris is back. So on this one, we can have Mr. Burris present House Sections 5 and 8.
Mr. Chair and members, House Sections 5 and 8 are found on pages R68 and 69 of the side-by-side. Section 5 would direct MnDOT to provide technical assistance to local units of government regarding planning and development of bikeways, bicycle routes, connection to state bike routes, and implementation of statewide bicycle planning. And then House Section 8 would create a designation of a Jim Oberstar bikeway that would run from the Twin Cities to Duluth and then along the North Shore to Canada.
Okay, members, again, just wanted to be somewhat surgical in our discussion of bike issues here, avoiding significant fiscal costs and HUTD overlap. So that's why we chose to have a conversation about these two items. Is there any discussion? Chairman Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding these provisions, I will say that I am fundamentally opposed to taking money out of the Trunk Highway Fund or HUTDF and using that money for the purposes of either adapting current lanes for bikeways or bike lanes, or building new bike paths or bike lanes. And the reason that I feel this way is I don't want you to believe that I am opposed to biking, because that would not be accurate. What I am opposed to is taking funds that are constitutionally dedicated for vehicle lanes and, in my mind, misapplying the spending of those monies to create bike paths. Now, I realize that that may not be a universally acclaimed idea, but that is how I feel about this. Now, should the legislature deem, for instance, that we're going to take all of the sales tax money from the sale of bicycles and maybe bicycle repairs and parts, maybe create some license tabs or license plates for bikes like we do for automobiles, maybe if we have the equivalent of a gas tax that we apply to bikes and take all of that money and dump that into the Trunk Highway Fund and HUTDF, maybe I'd feel differently. But from my vantage point, essentially what we are doing is allowing bikes to occupy part of the lanes paid for by people who drive automobiles. And I don't agree with that. Now, if we had provisions, for instance, where city streets or municipal streets, not paid for out of Trunk Highway Funds and HUTDF funds, I would feel differently. I think a city or a municipality has every right in the world to take one of their streets, and if they deem they want to make it a bike path, then I think they have the right to do that. And a point of fact, it actually might be safer for the bicyclist if they do that. So, for instance, Snelling Avenue, I believe, is a Trunk Highway 51. That's a pretty busy street. Maybe it would be safer for the bicyclists if you drop that bike lane down, you know, a block to the east or the west, and get the bikes off of a real busy street and onto a street that might be a little bit safer. And with the city's cooperation, you could probably very effectively create safer bike lanes. So those are my thoughts. I realize they may not be all that popular, but for those reasons, Mr. Chairman, I would not be able to support the provisions as outlined.
Thank you very much, Chair Newman. Is there any additional discussion of the motion? Any additional discussion? Okay, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of thinking about this, to me it seems like having more friendly bike routes would help with taking some of the congestion off of the roads. And so by supporting some of these policies, it actually would help save some of our roads.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. I mean, there are certainly, in some municipalities, we are seeing an increase in bicycle commuting. It's not simply a mode for recreation, and so I think your point is well taken. Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out that with these sections 5 and 8 in the House language, there is absolutely zero HUTD and Trunk Highway impact with these, beyond the fact of that this is asking MnDOT to help with technical planning assistance with communities, which they, as I understand, generally already do. So this is not an addition. This is not an impact in that way whatsoever. This is not – none of these things that we're talking about today are saying that we have to have – miles and miles of bike lanes built through Burnsville. I mean, that's not what these things are saying. They're not saying that we have to have this. These are good, solid legislation that will help with the safety of drivers, the safety of bicycle users. And I don't think that bicycles are bike riders are the enemy here, and that's the way this really feels with a lot of the Senate provisions and not taking these two provisions here is really frustrating, because there are really good ways that bicycles fit within the transportation system, and they're really important in the long run and today for having safe bicycle routes for people, because it is a very necessary mode of transportation for a variety of reasons, and it is, I guess, frustrating that bicycles are being treated in this way as a separate type of unworthy transportation. It's really bike lanes are really a part of the roadway system, and it's been proven over and over. And I believe that the Supreme Court even weighed in on the fact that is part of the system. And so I really wish that we can, especially with this one, to help local jurisdictions with planning assistance, that we can accept this and have bicycles be part of this bill.
Thank you, Vice Chair Tapke. Any further discussion? Okay, the motion is before us to adopt House Sections 5 and 8. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed?
No.
No.
The motion does not prevail. Okay, members, we're now on, it's just great. You know, transportation, we can go right from bike regulations to unfinished forest products weight tolerance. So that is the next item. And that would be House Section 21, and I believe we have an amendment to this. Is there a home for this amendment? Is someone going to be Representative Tapke? Okay, why don't we start with an explanation of the provision, and then we can take up the amendment. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, this is on page R78, House Section 21. And this concerns variances and tolerances for overweight vehicles. Under current law, motor vehicles can be registered, especially larger trucks, can be registered at various weights. And if the vehicle is cited for transportation above those weights, some penalties can apply, a misdemeanor penalty potentially, as well as required re-registration. There's a tolerance. There's actually a set of tolerances for percentage and calculations over and above the registered or actual weight of the vehicle when those penalties would not kick in. And under current law, for that tolerance has a couple of pieces for when unfinished forest products are being transported. And the change in the House language would be to provide for one piece of that tolerance to be year-round instead of just during a portion of the year. Just sort of as the starting point on that.
Good. And just members, this is a provision that came to us from Representative Eklund, who represents the International Falls area, but a wide swath of northern Minnesota. We could have some discussion or maybe move right to the amendment. Want to move right to the amendment? Okay. Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you said, this is a provision from Representative Eklund, and then working with DPS, there was an amendment that they and he would like to have added to this bill. And what this does is it references the gross weight limitations for forest products in Minnesota statute. So that's 169.8261 is the gross weight limitations for forest products. And so that's what that adds into this section.
Okay. Why don't we, I think this is sort of getting the bill in the shape that we'd like it considered in. So maybe we could discuss the amendment first, and then we'll discuss the broader provisions. So any discussion to the amendment? Again, this seems like a technical issue that comes from us from the DPS. To the amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. We're now back on the main motion to adopt House Section 21 as amended. Is there committee discussion
Chair Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we know what MnDOT's position on this is? I honestly don't remember.
There have been some conversations, and I think it would be appropriate to have MnDOT come to the table. Welcome to the conference committee, Mr. Peterson. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. Yeah, we've been having conversations about this particular provision all session. Before the language was amended, we thought that the language that had been changed earlier in the session would not really have a material impact on the weight limits that were in place. Talking to DPS, we realized they had concerns about the enforceability of what's considered this 5% overweight tolerance, which is what this provision applies to. So 4 years, and I'm getting a little bit into the DPS territory here, but 4 years there was a kind of allowance for truckers hauling raw and unfinished lumber products, so logs, I think, to haul 5% overweight on their loads. And during the period in which that tolerance was allowed, there was a new permitted weight that was enacted that allowed trucks to go up to as high as 99,000 pounds under certain configurations. And the law did not allow the 5% overweight tolerance to that, as I understand it. And so in general, I think there's, again, it's more complicated than that. I'm just trying to simplify it for the committee. And so, you know, we still have concerns about expanding the limits of the amount of weight that trucks can haul on our roads, because they do accelerate the deterioration of the roads. And so this is another step in that direction, where we're with this additional language now allowing more trucks, heavier trucks, up to 99,000 pounds, to actually have a 5% overweight on their loads all year round. So there's a seasonal aspect of this too. In the wintertime, when the roads are frozen, they can carry more weight without detriment. Bridges, however, still suffer the same impact. When you get into the summer, however, obviously the roads are not as strong as they are when they're frozen, and so this would allow those heavier weights to also travel during the summer. And so we do have some concerns about expanding the weight limits, because as members of these committees know, these truck weight limit questions come before the committee every year, and every year it seems like we chip away at them. Our roads, however, are not universally built to withstand these increasingly heavier weights. They're built to withstand 20,000-pound axle weights, and so they can go up to 99,000 pounds with more axles without detriment. But there's also local roads that are involved, and their roads are not built to nearly the same standards as trunk highways. And I think provisions like this cause even more and higher rates of deterioration than they do to trunk highways.
Thank you. Mr. Peterson, are there any questions of Mr. Peterson? I had an opportunity to confer with Chair Newman, and we are both in agreement that given this testimony, given some other issues that have arisen with a couple of different aspects to this forest products weight restriction, that we will lay this over pending some additional conversations with other members of the legislature and other stakeholders. So that would, I will amend my motion or I don't know, it was your motion, wasn't it? Okay, Representative Tapke, I would recommend that we lay over House Section 21, if that's okay with you. Okay, with that, we are laying over Section 21. Our next item is relates to special plates, and I wanted the committee to have a conversation about this, again, not necessarily to take action, but the House has a number of special plate requests. We heard those requests and passed them out of our committee.
They are included, of course, in the omnibus bill. We are, of course, going through a transition with our license and registration system, and I think it would be somewhat premature to take action on this without knowing completely what the future lies in terms of the transition that we're making. And I wanted to at least have that conversation here in the committee. I think that one idea that we are entertaining, the chair and I, would be to perhaps defer any action on special plates until the new system is up and running and can accommodate this. But, you know, that's just one idea, and maybe there's some others. Mr. Chair, if you wanted to comment, I would welcome your thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For 2 years now, the Senate has not taken any specialty plate bills for the specific reason that in dealing with the Minlars problem, it, number one, slowed the process down, and number two, was very expensive, apparently, to implement whatever program that they had to do to pick up these specialty plates. And so every time we would adopt a provision such as specialty plates, it was just increasing the problem. So we haven't picked up any specialty plates in the last 2 years. We have now are faced with a decision as to whether to keep on going with the current Minlars development or to take a different route that has been recommended by the governor's appointee, Rick King, to buy a packaged software program and go in a completely different direction. As I sit here, I don't know what the effect of including specialty plates in the Minlars / vitreous change if we were to do it now. I don't know what the effect would be. And so it would be my recommendation that we simply take no action on these specialty plates. It very well may be that the new program that has been recommended by the governor's appointment, Mr. King, will take care of this problem for us. That I don't know. But I also don't know if we do adopt these specialty plates, whether we are going to just create yet another problem, keeping in mind that if we go in the direction as recommended by Mr. King, we are going to put the Minlars program in a holding pattern as of June 30th. So for those reasons, Mr. Chair, I would strongly recommend that we simply lay the specialty plates on the table and pick them up next year after the new system, hopefully, is put into place.
Thank you for those comments, Chair Newman. Are there others that wanted to weigh in on this? Representative Torkelson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question would be, could we take action on these next year in the policy year without creating a budget problem? I don't know who can answer that.
I think Mr. Lee would be a good source of information for that. Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, in the past, fiscal notes for license plate bills have had programming costs that come out of the DVS Special Revenue Fund or Technology Fund, so that could be one way to pay for it or a general fund appropriation.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Representative Torkelson?
Well, thank you. I certainly understand that we don't want to add any more programming costs to Minlars. I think that is a given, or at least it's a given for me, and I think for the rest of us, if it's not, it should be, because those costs have been exorbitant, and if we're going to pull the plug or at least put Minlars on life support, we don't want to spend any more money than we have to just keeping it alive until M-Drive is up and running.
So, members, you heard it. You heard it first here. I actually, this was embargoed for release till now. I got a sneak preview on the House floor today. Representative Torkelson has named the new driver and registration system. Now, the DRIVE doesn't necessarily stand for anything yet, but we could have a contest for what that stands for. So Min Drive now is the, according to Representative Torres.
No, there's no Min. Min has got a terrible history around here.
Mr. Drive, I understand.
Using Min is
Mr.
Chairman, often.
My amendment to Representative Torkelson's amendment will be Torque Drive.
Oh, well.
I think we have a contest here for the end of session. We can involve other members in the public.
Mr. Chair,
yes, Representative Torkelson.
If I just may finish, the advocates for these plates have worked hard to present them this year. I think we should recognize that. Their efforts have been pretty strenuous, and I appreciate that. We do already have a ton of specialty plates, and I would hope that this delay will not necessarily mean that we won't consider specialty plates in the future once we understand better how the new program works, whatever it's called. Although I would suggest it be called M-Drive myself.
M-Drive. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to kind of echo what Representative Torkelson was talking about, a lot of the advocates have been pushing really hard for this. I can't go anywhere in my community where there's a lion who doesn't tell me they want their specialty plates. And I do have to say that that was probably one of my favorite days when we had the testimony on these lion's plates. It was one of the snowy days. And my testifier was not able to make it to the Capitol, so Representative Vogel pinch hit for me as a testifier. So I want to be able to go back and tell my Lions when we have our community parade in a few weeks that this will happen. We just need to wait a little bit longer. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, is there any further discussion? Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there possibility to write language on this that we can approve these and have these set and moving forward, but just have the effective date delayed until a new system is ready? Would that be okay with folks? Because we've got Veterans Affairs, we've got a lot of vet ones, we've got Peacekeepers, we've got Minnesota Ag Plates, we've got Lions Club, we've got Rotary, we've got many others from military service, and these folks are, as Representative Torkelson and Representative Cagle said, are very, very active and invested in these plates. And if there's a way we can do this to possibly write language that says once they're able to be programmed into a system that we can give them some clarity that this is actually moving forward, they don't have to fight for these anymore. But once the system is ready, that we could do that. Is that a possibility?
Chair Newman wanted to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Tapke. We had considered a proposed delay in the effective date, which is really what you are talking about. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that I simply don't know what the proposed package that is being purchased, how it will handle these specialty plates. I don't know if there's specific programming that will have to be added. I don't know if perhaps programming already simply exists within that program. And because we honestly don't know what the effect of what we would be doing, I would much prefer to wait until the system is implemented. All of the programs or the plates that you are referring to are very worthwhile. That is not at all what I am referring to. It's just that, for almost 2 years now, we have been struggling with this Minlars problem. I see the way to fix it maybe on the horizon, and I'm just very nervous about doing something that will upset what I see is the end in sight. So I would very much prefer if we did not delay the implementation and bring them up again, say, next year.
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I completely understand what you're saying, Chair Newman, with that. However, I would also like to still give clarity to folks that this is something that's important and that they don't think that it's not moving forward with things, and we know that Rick King would not work and leave us with a system that can't handle specialty plates. I mean, that's part of the gig that we know that have to come through. So if it if there's any appetite whatsoever to do this, I think that from the House side, we'd prefer being able to move forward with a delay and or at least see what kind of language could be written to get that kind of item implemented.
Well, I'm going to call on Senator Hall in a minute. You know, we are laying this over. We're not going to take a formal up and down vote on plates today. And, you know, Representative Tapke, if you want to work on language, I'm sure that, you know, we can run that by. I know that Mr. King is not available, but we could run it by others, you know, who are affiliated with the Blue Ribbon Commission. We certainly would want to run it by the Senate. If it makes sense to do it, we have time to do it. If not, we, according to Mr. Lee, could do it in a policy year. We'll have a better sense, of course, next year about how things are going. So, you know, one way or the other, we're going to get this done. But, you know, I certainly wouldn't discourage you from proposing some language. It's just, you know, an open question whether it can be adopted this year. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say, as a member of the Veterans Committee, we would typically want to take a look at all of these and make sure that the VFW would agree with them. You would think initially that they would. Why wouldn't they? But there have been many things that we brought up that they said, you know, that's not really where we're at. So I think a good discussion is be a good idea.
Okay. Well, again, we're laying this aside for now, members, and, you know, if something happens, we can revisit it. Both Senator Newman and I are very, very interested in ensuring that this session the appropriate funding is available for the transition to M-Drive. You know, we're going to be working. I mean, I think that's really the priority right now. And that's why some of you participated in the hearing that we had earlier this week on the broader bill that Senator Newman and I are sponsoring related to that. So if there's no further discussion, I'm going to move that we lay over House Sections 24 through 27. Members, I'm going to just skip a little out of order here. I know that Representative Cantrell wanted this committee to consider House Section 137C, and the reason I'm skipping this is I'm not sure. I think we're going to be either adjourning or recessing shortly, and we do have someone, I believe, from the City of Savage that wanted to very briefly testify. So I wanted to skip down to item number 11 and call on testify if they're in the audience. I don't know if they're here. Okay. And I believe Representative Tapke was, you know, had a motion and had some other materials he wanted to pass out.
Yes, there's a – thank you, Mr. Chair. There, this is Dan Patch repeal, and I think it would probably be best to have Mr. Burris explain first. Would that be all right?
Mr. Burris can explain, and then we'll proceed. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, this provision is found on page R177 of the side-by-side. It's in House Section 137, Paragraph C, and it repeals a 2002 law that established prohibitions on study, planning, engineering, design, construction of a commuter rail line running, known as Dan Patch, running from Minneapolis and the Twin Cities to Northfield. So this repealer would have the effect of eliminating those prohibitions.
Thank you, Representative Tapke. Do you have a motion and discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have a motion to incorporate House Section 137C into the conference committee, and Mr. Brad Larson from the City of Savage, the city administrator, is here to discuss if you would like.
I would appreciate very brief testimony. We also have, I believe, some correspondence from the city or other municipalities in that?
Yes, there's also significant support from the region for repealing the Dan Patch gag rule.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Brad Larson, City Administrator of the City of Savage.
Now proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. So the issue here is congestion. The river crossings in Scott County, all but one are at a level F in service because they're congested at peak times. The one remaining river crossing will be at a level F here in the next few years. So the issue here is congestion. Building additional lanes, relying on buses is not going to resolve the issue. We need to be able to look at alternative modes of transportation. The Dan Patch line is already in place. This would not be a new rail line. This line has been in place for years. It's behind people's houses. It was used for commuter rail back in the day. It's not anymore. It's used for freight. We would like this gag order to be repealed so we can more easily look at the possibility of using this line again for commuter rail. Technology has advanced. Engineering practices have advanced. We think this is a possible solution. This repeal is not going to solve the issue. We still have a lot of work to do, and so we're hoping with this repeal we'll get support from our neighbors, our regional rail authority, the county, to help put funds together. We're not asking for the state for funds at this point, but we would be putting our funds together to further analyze this. It's just hard to do this when there's a policy in place to not study something, a gag order. So that's all I have, unless there are questions.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. And just to be clear, this is not a proposal to build any kind of additional infrastructure, rail or otherwise. It's simply allowing local jurisdictions to study various possibilities for this corridor and fund those themselves, not via the state. Am I correct in that, Mr. Larson?
Correct.
Okay. Discussion, members? Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an item that is extremely important in the South Metro. There are, as Mr. Larson discussed, there are very, very limited lanes, especially from Scott County going north lane crossing the Minnesota River, and this is an option that's available, and there was a gag rule that was put in place many years ago that does not allow this line to be discussed, and no matter how you feel about this line and what should be happening, I think that it's really bad policy for the state government to say that something cannot be discussed and cannot be talked about. We can vote it up and down whether it's a good idea or not to have it going into the future, but this is the only thing that we know of that has this sort of crazy gag rule in place. And so we in the South Metro from Shakopee, Savage, Burnsville, we've got different efforts here to say that this needs to happen from all across the South Metro, and hopefully people can support adding this in the conference committee to get the this gag rule eliminated. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tapke. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do recall giving up one of my precious Fridays to go to a meeting in Savage.
That was a weeknight, isn't it?
Oh, that was that? Oh. Ooh. I misspoke, Mr. Chair. Thank you for correcting me. It was not a precious Friday like some of those other meetings that I went to. And this issue is quite controversial. As a member of the House Conference Committee, I know I'm supposed to support the House position, but in this case, I cannot support the House position, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. And, of course, you've been consistent on your position on this matter. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commuter rail in the state of Minnesota is a pretty hot topic at times, pretty controversial. It's my opinion that we simply do not have the population density that would in any way support commuter lines. And I think the operative comment that was made from our testifier was not asking for the for any funds from the state at this point. If we were to agree to this repealer, I have a very strong sense that we would very quickly be asked for state funds in order to do the study, and thereafter be find ourselves in a similar position that we are with light rail, something that I simply don't agree with. So I will not be supporting the repeal of this prohibition.
Thank you, Chair Newman. Any further discussion? Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to correct something from Representative Kapke. I believe you mentioned Burnsville. Burnsville is not in favor of this. Lakeville is very much opposed to this. I noticed that there were other cities involved, New Prague and some outside cities that I don't think it even goes through. I'm not sure if Bloomington's for it. So certainly the South Metro is not all for it, and there is a lot of contention about it. So it's really hard for me to vote for it. Savage is my city, and so is Burnsville and Lakeville. But I don't hear from the constituents that they're looking for it. I do hear that the governments want it. The county, Scott County, certainly Savage, but there's a lot of people that really don't want it. I hear from Lakeville, and of course it goes right through Lakeville, although it does look like, and I need to check that for sure, does this open up the or take off the mug order, whatever you want to call it, for the whole thing all the way down to Northfield? Is that what it does? To be studied all the way down Northfield?
Representative Tappy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this does is just allows people to talk about the Dan Patch line. This does not say that it should be used as a commuter rail. This does not say that it should be used as anything else that should go forward. What this says is that this repeal is that we should be able to talk about it, and we have significant congestion going across the Minnesota River, and we will have to do something about that, and it's going to cost millions and millions and millions of dollars to do those things. We've got the 35W bridges getting fixed, and we've got a lot of congestion going that way, and this is an option, and we should not be throwing away options just because somebody back decades ago in Edina did not want to discuss the Dan Patch line, and that's where this came from originally. So this would allow the Dan Patch line itself to be discussed, and Bloomington has come out very much in favor of at least being able to talk about it and see where things go. And I've also heard, just so you know, from significant number of people from Lakeville, especially while I was mayor, about commuter rail and why that was important to get the commuter rail moved up in the tiers of where up to a tier two project, which is different than this Dan Patch, but people do care about these things, and people do care about transportation solutions, and this is a solution, and we should be able to talk about it.
Okay, thank you, Representative Tappy. I'm going to call in a couple of people, and we're going to move to a vote. I believe, Senator Hall, your question was whether this prohibition or the language that we have on before us addresses other cities. So I want to make sure your question is answered. I wasn't quite sure if that was in Representative Tappy's, and maybe Mr. Burris could comment, or Mr. Larson, either one of you. I just want to make sure Senator Hall's question is answered. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hall, the repealer would be for the entirety of the route as far as the prohibition. So it's not an elimination of just a portion of the route.
Okay.
Potential route.
Thank you. I'm going to call on Representative Cagle, Senator Dibble, and then we'll move to a vote. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, one of the things that we're talking about is allowing counties and municipalities to decide what's best for their communities. And I think that we need, removing this gag rule would allow the counties and municipalities to explore the best options for them. And so I guess I just don't understand why we would tie their hands behind their backs and not allow them to look and see, you know, what is the best option. As the testifier said, technologies have changed, and, you know, what was good for the community 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 10 years ago might not be the same today. And so I think we should really allow these local entities to decide what's best for their communities.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Senator Dibble.
Thank you. I won't belabor the subject. I think Representative Tabke did a nice job of laying out the issues and the argument. I'll just say that we shouldn't fear studying something. I actually believe that the studies will reveal whether or not we have the kinds of density, whether or not this is warranted, whether or not this investment would have the kind of benefit that would be fitting of considering a facility like this. And I will just point to the examples of a couple of studies around the metro in which folks examined, you know, what kind of mode should be in that corridor, and it didn't turn out to be rail. You know, there's the Rush Line, the Red Rock, and others where the objective analysis showed what the ridership would be, what the level of investment warranted is. This came about, this prohibition came about because a couple of extremely powerful legislators at the behest of a few neighbors who didn't want that rail to come close to their backyards were able to put this prohibition in place. That's what happened. I was there when it happened. A couple of extremely powerful legislators put this in place over the objection of a lot of other less powerful legislators. That's what happened because a couple of folks didn't want a rail to come proximate to their literal backyards. And as a consequence, a whole region isn't able to study something that they should be able to take an objective scientific look at.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. I agree with you. And, of course, in the planning process, once it gets rolling, there is something called an alternatives analysis. And that does precisely what Senator Dibble does. Sometimes you have various rail options, various bus options, no-build options, are all part of the planning process. So, members, we will come to a vote here now on the Tabke motion. To approve House Section 137C. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Okay. We now, I think, are prepared to go to the Jasinski motion from yesterday, and I'll just refresh the memory of members of the committee. We had a lively discussion on the Jasinski provision around passing lanes on interstate highways. There are a couple of amendments that have been drawn up over the last 24 hours in response to this, and I know that just to recap, we had the original motion, then an amended motion. We had testimony from the State Patrol. I know that in the intervening time, I've had some additional conversations with the State Patrol, and that reflects the House amendment. I understand there's a Senate amendment, so I think we should have discussion of both of these amendments and see where we can go with this. So I will ask the author first to give us his latest thoughts. And again, if the State Patrol would like to testify in either of these amendments, their perspective is welcome as well. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. We originally did have another amendment, but we've worked with the House side, and just basically there's a small technical revision to that one. So I would offer the A114 amendment, which is a collaborative amendment between the House and the Senate and the Republicans and the Democrats and the State Patrol to reach a compromise that I think will really be great for the state of Minnesota. So I think everyone has the A114 amendment, so I'd ask to move the A114.
Thank you, members. The A114 is before us. I will have perhaps Mr. Burris explain to the committee and the public what exactly is involved in the A114 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, there are two parts to this. And the first is found on page one of the amendment. This is a technical cleanup that has to do with the move over law that was enacted separate from this, but dealing with the same statute. So this would make a conforming change to what was enacted earlier this year. It fixes an oversight on eliminating language that's made obsolete. So that's found on 1.2 to 1.19. The substance of the change is then found starting on page 1.20 and on to the next page. And this has a couple of pieces to it. It would revise the current move over when you're going slower language that's in statute now. And paragraph A would create a revision such that for motorists operating on one lane of travel, if they're proceeding in a manner that creates a traffic hazard, so they're going so slow that it creates a traffic hazard of some sort, they would be directed more clearly than under current law to move over to the right-hand curb or edge of the roadway. So this would address situations such as tractors or farm implements. Paragraph B addresses moving over in cases where there's more than one lane of travel in the same direction, so multi-lane highways, and would direct a driver to move out of the leftmost lane in order to allow other vehicles to pass when the existing conditions allow for that, when it's practicable. And it creates some exceptions for when that moving over would not be required. And it also establishes that if there is a min-pass lane, then the lane just next to that min-pass lane would be considered the leftmost lane. So the move over law would require, or this moving over requirement would kick in also for the lanes next to min-pass lanes. There is among the exceptions would be min-pass lanes. So a driver would not be required to move out of a min-pass lane if there were other vehicles indicating needing, wanting, desiring to go faster. And then there are a couple of other exceptions for turning, when passing or overtaking, as well as for authorized emergency vehicles.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Before I get to committee questions, I understand there is a small technical correction that Ms. Stengel noted. Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. On page 2 of the amendment, line 10, the word includes should be deleted and the word is inserted. So it will say leftmost lane under this paragraph is the lane adjacent.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Jasinski.
I would agree with that. Also, one question, just maybe a verification. On line 2.6, should that be sufficiently low or sufficiently slow? That would be the only other technical.
I would ask either side's counsel to clarify.
Mr. Chair and members, I guess I'll take a go at it. Mr. Burris can agree. I think either would work, but I think low makes more sense because you're talking about the rate of speed, and it would be a low rate of speed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm okay with that then.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any discussion to the proposed oral amendment on line 2.10, which I will repeat, deletes the word includes and substitutes the word is? Am I correct in that, Ms. Stengel? And I don't know, again, if there's any stakeholders that they're okay with that. All right, discussion of the oral amendment. All those in favor signify by saying, and I'll move that. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. We're back to the A114 as amended. Any discussion? Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the first time I'm seeing the A114 language, and we had been working off of an A112 amendment that I believe had gotten approval, and not necessarily approval, but had gotten input from Colonel Langer on that amendment, which we were looking at heavily on there, which is significantly different than A114, and I'd like to hear from Colonel Langer as to what he feels about A114, because he'll have to handle this and sure. See where we're going.
Absolutely. I appreciate that request, Representative Tagke. Colonel Langer, welcome back to the committee. We know you, but please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Matt Langer. I have the honor and privilege of serving as the Chief of the State Patrol.
And proceed, and I think Representative Tapke was interested in your thoughts on the A114 and any differences between the original amendment that had been contemplated earlier today.
Mr. Chair and Representative Tapke, the A114 clarifies in lines 2.2 to 2.7 a situation where a very slow operating vehicle, like a partially disabled vehicle or a tractor or some other type of implement, would be traveling on a two-lane road, and we wanted to make sure that this amendment clarified and maintained existing language that if you're driving one of those vehicles at a rate that's exceptionally slow, that you stay all the way to the right as far as possible on those two-lane roads. And then I believe there's just a couple other clarifications about what the leftmost lane is when you're on a roadway that has a min pass lane, and to make sure that that's clear to the readers and enforcement.
And further questions?
Just one. So just to be clear, you're comfortable with A114?
Mr. Chair and Representative Tapke, that's correct. I can sit here and support the A114 amendment as a way to modernize the current language consistent with today's roadways and get some language that makes sense, that reduces the propensity for road rage and gets vehicles to encourage them to move over when practicable to allow others to pass without any indication or subconscious language that would encourage speeding, because it's not enabled under this law.
Thank you.
And just to review, members, I think that some of the concerns which I know I shared, we don't want to send a message to encourage either explicitly or implicitly speeding. I think there was some discussion about the need to update existing law around impeding driving. And then I think the third concern that I believe this amendment addresses is the ability for the State Patrol to adequately enforce this provision. And Colonel Langer, can you confirm that those three items of concern that were raised yesterday are addressed in this amendment?
Mr. Chair, members, those three issues are addressed.
Okay. Thank you, Colonel Langer. Senator Jasinski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to thank Colonel Langer and Captain Olson for working with me to get the language that is acceptable to everyone. I really believe this is going to help efficient traffic movement throughout the state. I think it increases the safety because we do have a lot of people passing in the right lane, which is kind of not normal. It's done in 13 other states, so I think it's a good law. In compromise, the language I would like is I originally intended to increase the fine to $100, and I would like to withdraw that and leave that at $50. That fine would also be has subject to a surcharge, I believe, of $75, so the actual fine would be $125, and that's in another section, so that doesn't affect this amendment. And then also I'd like to retain the public awareness section in compromise. I think this is a good way to get it out to the public to help that efficient movement of traffic throughout our state.
Okay. Members, those items are not addressed in the A114, but they are, I believe, part of perhaps the original motion. I guess I would, while Colonel Langer is on the with us here, I would be interested to know: is there any change in penalties? Is this a change, or are we just simply enacting existing law? If there's in these changes, penalty changes.
Mr. Chair and members, my understanding is that the A114 would leave the penalties alone and they'd be the same as they are today.
Okay, so the penalties are the same. The second question then is, I know that Representative Cagle had support for the second piece that Senator Jasinski had mentioned, which is the public education piece. And I'll have Representative Cagle make a statement or ask a question. But my only thought or concern about that is, would the State Patrol be able to fund this adequately? Are we putting any kind of unfunded mandate on the patrol? Do we need to look at this as part of our general fund target? That would be my only question. Perhaps you could address that, and I'll call on Representative Cagle. Representative Cagle, sounds like you have a question to that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just thinking, per conversations that maybe we could come back to the public awareness campaign once we get our budget targets, so that we aren't putting a fiscal burden on the State Patrol.
I'm sorry. I was distracted temporarily. Could you repeat your question?
Just that we would come back to that public awareness piece once we get our targets.
Let's hear what Colonel Langer has to say about the ability of the State Patrol to do a public awareness campaign. I do think it's a good idea. I just want to make sure that you have the resources to do it.
So, Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Cagle, it's a good question. We would obviously want the public to know of any law changes, and there's several law changes related to traffic enforcement and traffic safety issues. It's easy for us to do earned media, so the interest in the media as relates to this law would be there, and we'd do interviews, and we'd talk about it, and we could plug it on our social media. That's easy to do, and it's what we do all the time with our existing staff. But to do an actual public education campaign is different, and I'm not exactly sure what the scope would be or the magnitude of such a campaign would be predicted by the author or others. So for us to do that, that is more challenging, and we'd have to shift funds to make that happen somehow. I would also offer that throughout the rest of this summer, we're really going after the hands-free law as an important public education campaign. So to put this on top of it and try to figure out how that all works is difficult, and at the end of the day, doing some type of campaign without an appropriation to accomplish that, of course, is an unfunded mandate. At the same time, we value education at the Department of Public Safety.
Okay, thank you, Colonel Langer. Representative Cagle, did you have a follow-up? Otherwise, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Boyd, would you be able to address the fiscal issue on the public awareness campaign?
Mr. Chair, I can in part. There was a fiscal note done on a previous version of this language in the bill, and at that point the department stated that any public awareness campaign wouldn't be incorporated into existing media projects and absorbed in their current spending on those. But again, the language has changed, so we obviously would want to double check with the department on that one.
If it's okay, Chair Newman and Senator Jasinski, I think we should adopt the A114 now as a placeholder. That will put the policy in place, and then if we could just revisit this public awareness campaign, I'm committed to it. I just want to make sure we get the right language and the right funding in place so that it's successful. Would that be acceptable to the author and to the chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that would be acceptable to that.
Okay. Thank you very much, members. Is there any further discussion to the A114 amendment? Thank you, Colonel Langer. Okay, and I just want to express my thanks to the State Patrol and my thanks to Senator Jasinski. This had the potential to be a, pretty dicey one, and I really appreciate that everyone was able to come together. Great. Really appreciate your work.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, a special thanks to Colonel Langer and Captain Wilson. They've both been wonderful, as well as your staff and our staff, to get this done. So, again, thank you, and I agree with that.
Good. If there's no further discussion, Senator Jasinski renews his motion that the Conference Committee adopt the A114 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 As amended, sorry. A114 amendment as amended. We have the Ms. Stengel's correction. So the motion is A114 as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed. The motion prevails. Members, Senator Newman has informed me that he has a few more minutes. One second. We're going to just take about a one-minute recess here. Members, we're just conferring about the remainder of the agenda, which will be about a half hour long. I want to talk with a couple of our members, and then we'll proceed.
Yeah.
Are they going again? It's for real.
Better than the bitters.
Okay. So, members, we here's the plan. We are going to go till about approximately 5:20. There's definitely a few priority items for we want to get through on our agenda, and then Senator Newman has agreed that any remaining items on our House agenda for today, we would take up tomorrow, first thing. And I said that we'll take up a few of these. We'll get through as many as possible, and anything we don't pick up, we'll do tomorrow.
And you would pick up today 24 through 31.
Correct.
And
yep.
These are
and a few of those.
Yeah. If we get through them, that's fine.
Yeah.
Anything we don't get done here, I will do tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Members, we're going to start with items 24 through 26, and then we'll go to 29 through 31. On the sheet, those relate to tribal issues and environmental issues. So let's talk through these with the council. R11, and this is Article 1, lines 11.14, 11.19, and this is for discussion. This particular, we're not going to make a motion to adopt this. This is for discussion. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, as you noted, this is on page R11. This is a rider that would go with part of the Department of Transportation's agency services appropriation and would provide funds from both the general fund and the trunk highway fund for facilitation of tribal training that the department provides to state agencies.
Hey, is there a discussion to this, members? I know that I think it would be helpful if the committee heard from MnDOT on this particular provision. Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Scott Peterson from MnDOT.
We'd be very interested in MnDOT's perspective on, I assume all three of these are your agency initiatives. So both Section 17 and 89. We'll do the first one, Article 1, lines 11.14 to 11.19 first, then we'll have Council talk about Section 17 and then Section 89, but we'd like your perspective on all three.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the last 6 years, MnDOT has been providing training to state employees to help improve their effectiveness in their interactions and delivering services to tribal nations across the state of Minnesota. The training to date has primarily focused on MnDOT employees, but it has been so successful that we keep getting more and more requests from other agencies to have their employees also take the training. The governor's recent executive order also identifies this particular training program as one that he is requiring all state employees whose job duties interact with tribal nations to take this training to help improve their ability to work effectively with tribes. And so the appropriation that we're asking for here, the Trunk Highway Fund piece, will be used to help continue the training, but also to help develop online training along with the general fund appropriation, to develop online training for state employees, because we just don't have the capacity to reach all the people that we need to reach with the training in our in-person training sessions. And then we would also expand our in-person training sessions from what had been 4 to 5 a year to maybe 7 or 8 a year or more, whatever we have the capacity to do with the general fund appropriation. And so just to give the committee a little brief background on what the training does is that it goes through a brief history of the interaction between Native people and other folks who moved to Minnesota, and to kind of describe the experience of Native Minnesotans primarily in the 20th century into the 21st century, and how we came to be where we're at today with this kind of unique legal relationship and kind of the challenges that presents, but also then highlight some of the cultural differences that we need to be aware of when we go to work within the boundaries of tribal nations. And so I can speak with absolute confidence that this has been tremendously effective, and that is why the governor has asked us to try to provide this to more and more employees. The reason MnDOT continued to provide it for the last 6 years is because of the dramatically improved results we've seen in providing state services on tribal territory. A lot of trunk highways go through Indian reservations. Also, there's a lot of federal fund interaction between the federal funds that the state receives and the federal funds that are targeted towards tribal governments. And so so it really has helped us identify ways to work better together, to avoid conflict, to provide improved services, and do it with a sense of respect that I think has helped build a lot of trust in the department in Indian country, and I think it really has gone a long way to kind of improve the lives of the Minnesotans as a result.
All right, thank you, Mr. Peterson. It's my preference that we not vote on this particular provision now because of the fiscal implications, and you know we'll have to just see over the next few days if there's some ways we can incorporate that in our budget. So we appreciate your testimony on this, but on this particular provision, we won't take a vote. However, I am interested in seeing if we can advance Section 17 and Section 89. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this might have been covered while I stepped out for a moment, but if I could ask the testifier a question.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that this has existed within the Department of Transportation for some time, but yet other agencies come to you for training. Does DOT bill the other agencies that receive these services from DOT?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, each individual employee that attends the training is required to pay the registration costs for the training, so the cost for the facility, the instructors, and the curriculum that's distributed that day. The cost of the development of the training to this point has been borne by the department.
Thank you.
Thank you. If there are no further questions or discussion, we'll lay over this item. Well, we never really made a motion. This is just for discussion purposes. Mr. Peterson, if you could stick around for the next couple sections, and I would just ask, since we have a few more provisions we'd like to do before approximately 5:20, to keep your testimony quite brief. Mr. Burris from House Research, if you could go over Section 17.
Mr. Chair and members, House Section 17 is found on page R75. And this would provide authority to the Department of Transportation to create a employment preference for members of federally recognized tribes. And that preference would apply to highway projects that are located on or near an Indian reservation.
Okay. I think that's pretty straightforward. I don't know if you have anything more that you'd like to add. Okay. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this provision doesn't have any fiscal impact, and it's also permissive language that just goes in alignment with what's already in federal law. So I'm hoping that this is a provision that we would be able to move forward.
Okay. Representative Richardson, would you like to move then Section 17?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Is there a discussion to House Section 17? Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. During your committee hearings on this, was there discussion? The definition seemed vague as to what is near, where it says, within a distance, a person seeking employment could reasonably be expected to commute. Was there a discussion as to what this, I mean, that just seems, for putting that into statute, it seems a bit vague.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In terms of the way that this has worked with the federal language that is currently in operation, it's usually done in operation with the tribes to determine what would be a reasonable distance.
Thank you. And again, this is almost, I don't want to be wrong in terms of my legal interpretation, but it's almost as if it's conforming with existing federal policies on this question. Is there any, Mr. Peterson, do you have a response to that question from Senator Rarick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Definition of distance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Richardson is correct. This it's conforming language with the federal regulations. And it's one we've been wrestling with a little bit, because what is near depends upon where someone is located. If you're near and you live in Shakopee, or, you know, we're doing work near the Midwaukee Dakota Reservation, near could be 20 miles away. If it's a Boys Fort reservation, you know, there's quite a bit more distance to cover to get enough people to work on a project. But we have been focusing in on providing a standard distance, and right now we're looking at 60 miles as like the maximum distance within which this person would be considered for the preference.
Okay, I think we're coming to a vote. Representative Richardson, did you have any further comments or thoughts about the vote here?
No, I would just ask for support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Okay, any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Okay, our last item under this category is Section 89, I'll ask House Research to go over that one.
Mr. Chair and members, House Section 89 is found at the very bottom of page R-122, extending onto the next page. This would add tribal governments to the types of entities that would be able to receive Greater Minnesota Transit funds that are administered by the Department of Transportation.
Okay, that seems fairly straightforward as well. I'll move Section 89. Mr. Peterson, can you just give us very brief couple of examples about what this transit assistance would, how this would, and on a day-to-day basis, assist tribal governments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason that we've come forward with this proposal primarily relates to the federal government shutdown that occurred late last year, earlier this year, and the federal, tribal governments that operate transit services within their jurisdiction were not able to access federal funds to keep their transit services operating, so they actually had to discontinue providing transit service. And we were interested in providing some assistance in order to keep their operations going until the federal government was able to provide funds, but because they weren't listed as an eligible recipient, we were unable to do that. So that's the issue we're trying to correct with this language.
Okay, thank you, Senator. You're always a House member to me. However, you are officially a senator, Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I'm reading through this, I look at my area. In Hinckley, they have got around the casino. They've got a number of facilities there, and there's a reservation land about 25, 30 miles away. Is this the type of transit that would do that, or is this also going to be operating shuttle buses that are bringing people to the casino for gambling purposes? Are these transit, I'm not seeing in this, but is it specifically transit bringing people in for services and things of that nature?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, this is more this is the type of service that we fund other transit, Greater Minnesota Transit operations throughout Minnesota. So this just adds them as an eligible recipient to provide a similar type of transit service. So this is something that someone in Bemidji or some other community, Wilmer, St. Cloud, you know, just sometimes it's regular. Well, I don't think that tribal governments provide any regular route service, but it would be, some kind of taking people to the hospital, to the school, to shop, to work, that kind of transit service. Those are the types of services we typically provide.
Thank you. Okay, is there any further discussion to House Section 89, R-122? We'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion to approve House Section 89 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Members, we have just a couple more items here.
Could you consider
members, actually, Mr. Lee has informed me that Section 118 should really be in the fiscal provisions, so we're going to just not address or discuss that, and we'll have some very brief conversation and voting, if it's okay. Article 4, one and three, maybe we could take these together if that's okay, in a combined motion. They're somewhat similar. Well, let's keep them separate. So Representative Tabke, the first one, we'll have, I think you will move that, but I'd like to have House Research go over it first. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, on page R48, House Section 1 modifies the goals of the state transportation system that are sort of conferred onto the Department of Transportation to specify or add zero emission vehicle promotion, as well as make reference to accomplishing the various goals with minimal impact to human health.
Hey, thank you very much, Mr. Burris. Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'll make a motion to adopt Article 4, Sections 1 and 3. And what these simple changes do, these are from Representative Wolgamott and in St. Cloud, and what these do is our language currently has transportation and environmental transportation goals, and so there's a series of 16 different goals, and what it does is just modifies two of those goals, and one is number 11, which says currently in language is to promote and increase the use of high occupancy vehicles and low emission vehicles, and what this will do is add zero emission vehicles to that, and then also it adds and human health to align with what is happening today and where we're going in the future, and so it is a very good amendment to where we're at with transportation and our future goals.
Thank you very much, Representative. I see Mr. Fay here. I don't know if he's available for some very brief testimony. He has been
active on this issue, and I'd like to hear from him. Mr. Fay, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Chairman. My name is Justin Fay. I'm here on behalf of Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a 25-year-old Minnesota-based nonprofit that advocates for energy policy solutions that work for all Minnesotans. We appreciate the legislation, the inclusion of Sections 1 and 3 in Article 4. As Representative Tapke noted, this was an underlying bill that was carried by Representative Wolgamott in the House and Senator Ralph in the Senate. As we were chatting with the both of the bill authors and thinking about what some modest, reasonable steps forward might be on electrified transportation in 2019, we were a little surprised that there wasn't anything in our state transportation goal statute related to zero emission vehicles, and even more surprised that there wasn't actually a reference in there anywhere to human health, which is, we thought, sort of striking given the length of the statute. So we appreciate the inclusion of these two sections of Article 4 in the House and recommend their adoption in the omnibus in the conference committee report. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Fay and discussion, Representative Torkelson? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You have your hand up. You had that sort of I really want to ask a question look.
Okay. Mr. Chair, and I should probably know the answer to this, but I don't. Is there a formal definition of a zero-emission vehicle?
Mr. Fay.
I do not believe there is a definition of that phrase currently in state law.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. And I, you know, I think the understanding might be that it's an all-electric car, but still, even an all-electric car, while it may not emit anything while it's traveling down the road, the electricity that's used to charge it, the manufacturing plant that manufactures it, the disposal of it once it's worn out, all involve emissions. So I would guess it might be something that's hard to define.
Thank you. Is there any further other questions for Mr. Fay? And Mr. Fay, I want to also thank you for your work this session, not only in the Transportation Committee, but you're active in the Energy and Climate Committee on the House side, and I think the work that we've done to electrify the transportation system that you've advocated has been groundbreaking, and I hope that that work can advance in one way or the other, so thank you. Members, the motion before us is the Tapke motion to adopt House. Oh, Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like a roll call on this vote, please.
Okay, Mr. Representative Tapke asked for a roll call. This is article, again, for the members' references, are 48 and 49, Article 4, Sections 1 and 3.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the record, I want to indicate that I will not be supporting this motion. In hearing and listening to the testimony this afternoon, it would appear to me that the Transportation Committee has concurrent jurisdiction with the Environment Committee, the Energy Committee, and Health and Human Services Committee on this issue. I don't believe any of these provisions have been heard in those committees, and I would oppose the motion.
Okay. Thank you for that. So if there's no further discussion, Ms. Stephen will take the roll.
Chair Newman?
No.
Chair Hornstein?
Yes.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Hall?
Yes.
Senator Jasinski?
No.
Senator Rarick?
No.
Representative Cagle?
Yes.
Representative Richardson?
Yes.
Representative Tapke?
Yes.
Representative Torkelson?
No.
There are six ayes and four nays. However, there are Senate has three no votes, so the motion does not prevail.
We have one last item, if that's okay, for quick discussion purposes. I know I don't want to delay you too much. Yes. And members, we're not going to take action on Articles 4, Section 2, and 118 because there's fiscal impacts here, but we may revisit this once we have targets, if and when we have targets. But I thought it would be good to visit this issue now. If House Research can just very briefly summarize Article 4, Section 2, and then Senator Dibble will have some comments.
Mr.
Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, on page R49 is House Section 2. This would direct the Department of Transportation to create an annual report on climate and greenhouse gas reduction goals and how the department has been working towards and achieving the goals or the reason for not achieving those goals, as well as any recommendations on legislative changes.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Senator Dibble, you and I have both talked about this and its importance, and I thought maybe you could just briefly explain to the committee your thinking on this important provision.
I'm here to vigorously defend this House provision, Mr. Chair. there's the simple fact is that there's been an awful lot of discussion and attention and policy effort and resource devoted to reversing our contribution of greenhouse gas emissions in the electrical generation sector of Minnesota's economy. And that has been somewhat successful, very successful, some would say. We still have a long ways to go there, but greenhouse gas emissions are actually declining from our energy generation activities in Minnesota. However, the same can't be said for transportation. In fact, transportation contributes more greenhouse gas emissions, and that's increasing. So more than the electrical energy sector, and it's going in the wrong direction. And back when we did adopt our greenhouse gas emission reduction goals, our climate goals, for the state of Minnesota, we also adopted a roadmap to address those issues in about 7 or 8 or 11, I can't remember, different sectors. And commissioned a study, some research that came from the University of Minnesota about how we might be able to do that in the transportation arena, and learned a couple of interesting things. One was that nothing super magic needs to happen. It's just a matter of really focusing on technology and policies we have available to us already. And, and some of those technologies are getting better. And, and some of the policies are really coming into focus about how they can really help contribute. And so the idea here is just to start aligning our focus and gaining our attention and asking for the leadership of our transportation department to help us figure out to establish some goals, to fulfill the priorities that we set forth a few years ago, help lead the state in that discussion, work with the legislature to figure out what we need to be doing, if we need to be changing policies and laws to be able to reverse the trend in that arena.
Thank you. Well said. And I would just reiterate the important point that transportation has become now the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions, as Senator Dibble said, eclipsing the electric energy sector, and it is the fastest growing source. So I do believe that it is, while there, as Chairman Newman correctly points out, there are other areas of jurisdiction, including environmental committees and energy committees, I do believe that because the transportation sector is now squarely in the mix as a key part of a climate solution, that it's very appropriate for us to discuss these issues, to create policies around these issues, to
to ensure MnDOT is addressing these questions, to make sure the Met Council is addressing these questions, and that is what we attempted to do in a number of provisions on the House side. So, members, I'm going to make a quick concluding comment. So, again, we're not taking action on this. It is a fiscal piece, and I'm just speaking of fiscal pieces. There are a couple of areas in policy that really belong in our fiscal provisions for discussion only category, if you're following along. And this would certainly be one. The Met Council emissions-based bus deployment would be another one, which we'll be revisiting when we talk about money. And, of course, Senator Jasinski's item around public education related to his provision would be another one. And, you know, as I've discussed this with Senator Newman, we have a number of areas in both the House and Senate that deal with motor vehicle dealers on both sides that we have not discussed yet. And those we will get to, but they really are relate to the new M-Drive situation. And, you know, we're going to have to he's on his phone. He's not even torque drive, sorry. Whatever we call it, you know, we're going to really have to focus on this at some point, a variety of provisions that relate to motor vehicle dealers. But there are others that we didn't get to today, and we'll get to tomorrow. And Senator Newman, give us your thoughts and roadmap for tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members. I apologize. I am now truly on Senate time and late. So, and that's the reason we have to break up, and I do apologize. It would be my intention to call a hearing tomorrow. I think it's going to be at 3 o'clock, but I'm not going to post it at that time because as I sit here, I'm not certain. But just watch for it, and we'll come in. The items I have on my list that we did not get to today that Chairman Hornstein would like to finish tomorrow would be, if you refer to your sheet, your little cheat sheet, the time-stamped 8:41 p.m., it's items 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, and 16, which is the fiscal portion of the of Senator Jasinski's bill, assuming we can get an answer on that public information. Those would be the intention that I would bring up for sure tomorrow. And I will be meeting hopefully with Chair Hornstein right away in the morning where we can develop a little bit further. But at this point, members, I really do have to go. I apologize.
Chair Patty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just clarifying, we're not taking 19, 20, and 21 as well, and then 30, 34 through 38.
So those are fiscal provisions.
We can talk about it tomorrow, but that's going to be minimized.
Yeah, well, then our staff has explained to us 19, 20, 21, as well as Mrs. Bacchus has confirmed that those have absolutely nothing to do with MnLARS, the new torque drive at all. So those are things that we can accept without interaction with those. So we can talk about it tomorrow, absolutely. I just want to make sure we get them on the list.
Mr. Chairman, I have no problem putting them on the list and talking about them. I'm not sure that I'm going to agree that they have anything to do with MnLARS, but I suppose that would be the reason why we're going to have the discussion.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I've been advised as the chair not to call on you, however, as the ranking member of the committee that I chair, I am calling on Representative Torkel.
I would just note that M Drive is trending on Twitter and Torque Drive is getting no traction whatsoever.
All right. Thank you very much for a very productive day, members. We are adjourned.